Hi, everyone. This is Holly Herndon.
I'm Matt Dryhurst.
And you're listening to
Interdependence.
We decided to provide a little context for today's podcast. In conjunction with this year's Ljubljana Biennial of Graphic Arts, titled Iskra Delta, curated by Tjaša Pogačar, we interviewed Janez Skrubje, the author of The Cold War for Information Technology, The Inside Story. Inside indeed, as Janez was the former CEO of Iskra Delta, a major contender on the world stage for not only personal computers, but also large-scale networked IT systems. Based within Tito's Yugoslavia, it was caught in the crosshairs in the Cold War, working between the US, Soviet Union, China, and India, with each corresponding intelligence agency pushing their own agenda. Janez was the managing director during this time and was personally paid visits by the presidents of the Soviet Union, China, and India, as well as the CIA and KGB. Ultimately, the conflicting interests overpowered the small IT company and it closed, leaving Europe without a major contender in the global IT race. It's a treat to speak to Janez about this extraordinary situation and to imagine an alternative history where Iskra Delta might have had a fighting chance.
I guess my first question will be, can you please just introduce yourself?
Yes, I can introduce. My name is Janez Skrubje. I was born in 1946 in Mežica, Slovenia. I graduated from University of Ljubljana, Department of Information Technology. I was alumnus of MIT program for senior executive year 1989, and I served as first digital equipment corporation distributorship for former Yugoslavia from 1974 through 1978. Then I founded Delta Computers in 1978 and served as general manager. After merging with Iskra Corporation in 1982, the new company Iskra Delta Computers, the largest computer company in former Yugoslavia, was founded, and I was its president and chief executive officer from 1982 to 1989. In 1985 to 1986, Iskra Delta Computer designed and built first computer network in China for Chinese police under my management. And this was the most important work which we did during our life.
Yeah, we read all about the story, and it's really quite fascinating. And so I wonder, how was Iskra Delta formed?
In 1973, when I went to United States to Digital Equipment Corporation for training, that after this we represent digital in Yugoslavia, I learned a lot of how to build such company from the beginning, from the Ken Olson, how he built it also digital in '60s, you know. And when I came back, then I tried to get all the best engineers in Yugoslavia, especially when we started to sell digital computers to all institutes and universities in Yugoslavia. And that is the reason that we came together with the best people and the best engineers. And that's the reason that we founded Delta in 1987, and the first computer which we built under the OEM agreement with DEC. This means that we bought only CPU from them, and all the rest we bought from Japan, for disks and so on from Fujitsu. Yep. And this computer we gave as a present to Marshal Tito, you know, as an advertisement that we, in such way, we came to the market. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then in 1982, we had to join to Iskra and become Iskra Delta. And then again, I was president of this company. And from 92 to 1990, when they put us in bankrupt because we were too big, this bankrupt ended this year. This means after 25 years, we had so many assets that they didn't spend them, and now that's finally finished this year.
Well, we definitely want to get into the story of the bankruptcy and how that all came about, because it's really fascinating. But maybe just to set up our listeners with a little bit of historical context, can you tell us a little bit about the kind of political backdrop that your company was founded in the former Yugoslavia with Tito, and just a little bit of kind of, for those who might not know the full history of the region, and I don't expect you to give us the full history, but maybe just a little bit of background of what the political climate was like at that time.
You know, the political time climate was not good. First of all, we had some we didn't have the political situation like was in the United States. We have some kind of planned economy, and we as engineers with them which I started. We start to work as entrepreneurs, and this was against the policy in Slovenia and Yugoslavia, and they didn't like us, you know. But because they need computers, and we built computers very economically, this means that we bought only processors from the States, and all the peripherals for the computer in Japan. This means that we built very, very profitable computers. And Yugoslavia, in this time, they didn't have hard currency. They didn't have enough, dollars. And that is the reason that we succeeded. And we also, from the beginning, had market orientation. This means that we got money from our customers. And we didn't only sell the computers. We also built our own application software and system software. And we made a lot of innovations. And that is the reason that we succeeded without any help from the government. Both government, federal and republics, were against us because we didn't fit in the political system, because we started with something new, and that is the reason that we have all the time problem with them. But because they need us, they leave us that we work without too much problems, you know.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it's also important maybe to establish why you were needed. The book is full of great context around there. You mentioned just now that at the time of the formation of the company, you were really kind of on par with a lot of technological developments that were happening in the States at the time. And the two that I took notes of here are speaking about, you know, the advent of parallel processing and multiprocessing. Would you mind going into some detail as to what the climate was at the time for home computers, mini computers, as you call them in the book, and what kind of developments you all were doing in Slovenia in relation to that to that development in the States?
You know, first of all, we were lucky that we started with Digital Equipment Corporation. In this time, in 70s, DEC was the largest mini computer producer and the most innovative company in the world. And we learned a lot of from them. That's the reason that also we sent our engineers to Digital, that we learned a lot of knowledge needed for servicing computers and all how to approach to the market and so on. Yep. And that is the reason that we also see that we can do a lot of things on our own, that we don't need to buy from DEC what is not originally from DEC. That's the reason that we also established good relations with Japan companies like Fujitsu and so on. And our goal was to compete with the companies which started in such way like we did in the United States in Silicon Valley, and that is the reason that we also opened our office in Silicon Valley and start to sell our modules also to United States. But most important was that we really succeeded to get the best engineers from whole Yugoslavia, and that is the reason that we established a very strong development team. And this team was not only for the hardware part, but very important for the software part. This means that we started before DEC and IBM with a very good application software, and we offer total solutions to our customers, not only in Yugoslavia, but later on also in Germany, Austria, and where we can sell computers, because we were not in the position like other socialist countries. We were special. We had special position to the United States based on the agreement with Tito and President Nixon.
Yeah, it seems like you really formed a kind of dream team of entrepreneurs, engineers,
yes.
Everyone speaking kind of multiple languages and it being fairly international. That was one of the maybe most devastating parts of it, was to see that the company was broken apart and that team was no longer allowed to stay together. I can imagine that was difficult for you.
Yes, this was very difficult because in Slovenia we had a representative of IBM. IBM in this time, they were selling only mainframe computers to the government, you know. Can you imagine that we didn't succeed to sell any our computer to the government or federal or republics because they didn't believe us, they believe only to IBM. And that's the reason that they didn't like us. But because we were profitable and we were selling to the customer which needed computers, like especially on process computers especially later on for communication. We built our own communication software before we started with our microcomputers Trident and Partner, which we were selling in big quantities. But those were only our machines with the U.S. processors. And that is the reason that based on our knowledge, also Chinese, when they started 35 years ago, they learned from us how to work with America.
Was there ever a reason given from the federal government why they chose to work primarily with IBM and not with a homegrown tech company? Or was it just something that was kind of, you had a feeling that, I don't know, was there ever kind of like a concrete a reason why they said that?
You know, first of all, they, from the beginning, they didn't believe us. They believed only to large companies like IBM, CDC, Borux, Univac, and so on, which were all in Yugoslavia in this time. Mm-hmm. But all these companies were selling only in Yugoslavia because they didn't have opportunity to sell to other countries like Poland, Hungary, Russia, and so on, because we have special position in this time. And because IBM was very large, and in this time IBM didn't have his own microcomputer, only the computer, IBM PC, was built by somebody else. And they bought the software from Bill Gates and processors from Intel. But later on, we also bought processors for our Triglav from Intel and Motorola, and we built our own application software and bought also MS-DOS from Bill Gates. Bill Gates is the same age like we were, and we had discussion direct with them, you know. Microsoft in this time, in 1980, was a very small company, you know. We were more or less the same size.
Yeah, it's a funny passage in the book where you discuss how Bill Gates had an advantage actually in establishing his company because of relationships with IBM. This was like a really nice insight.
That is true.
Tell us more.
You know, Bill Gates was very smart, according to IBM. IBM didn't believe in small computers, in microcomputers. They didn't allow to build this inside IBM. They ordered this from one company outside IBM, I think from somewhere from Florida. And Bill Gates, when they find out that they need also microcomputers, Bill Gates sold them his own software, and later on they bought also new microprocessors from Intel, and in such way IBM started to sell also PCs. And in the same time, we came out with our partner, and our partner, which we built completely here, was based on the Intel microprocessor and site of CPM, which was another Bill Gates competitor, Digital Research, also from the States. And we have really opportunity to work with the equal level with all these entrepreneurs in the States, and we exchange our minds and so on. That is the reason that we succeeded. But what was interesting, that from the beginning, our government and nobody believe us. We just work and grow very fast because we had our own money. We learned. We got this in the market, you know, and we didn't get any support from the government.
That's so wild.
Yeah, in fact, it was quite the opposite. I mean, I was reading that at one point when you guys hit a kind of liquidity crisis, the inflation rate, the local inflation rate was 100%. So obviously for a growing kind of liquidity hungry tech company, that posed a huge issue for you. Is that correct?
Yeah, but you know, when Yugoslavia split between republics, and 1989. This was impossible to live, and that is the reason that I left the company and went to United States to MIT.
And so if we jump back, so I want to celebrate first, before we're going to talk about China in a second, but I want to kind of celebrate. You mentioned a partner and some of the things that this home computer, mini computer, was able to do. At some point in the book, you reference that at the time, you know, a lot of parallel processing systems would cost millions, but parsers could be done, you know, you could achieve similar goals for the cost of like a home computer.
Yes,
at the time.
You know, mainframe computers from IBM in this time, in 70s and 80s, cost almost $1 million, you know, mainframes. And we started with mini computers, which DEC invented, you know, and mini computers from Digital were much better technology that in this time IBM had, you know. And this is the reason that we were lucky that we had behind us Digital Equipment Corporation, and we established very good relations with them. And in the end, in Europe, in this time, in 80s, we were the only one which produced our own computer based on U.S. chips, because all other U.S. companies established their own subsidiaries in Europe, West Europe, and all Europe computer companies died, you know. And today, Europe doesn't have any computer. They completely depend on the United States.
Yeah, which is, it's crazy context. I think that aspect of the story alone is really quite fascinating. The fact that there was, I mean, for it to happen in socialist Yugoslavia, it makes it even more remarkable. But the idea that there was a competitive European computer company in the midst of the Cold War is kind of a remarkable story in and of itself.
Yes, you know, and this was really a very difficult time, especially when we succeeded in the China. Can you imagine when I present computer network which we accidentally sent to China because Chinese came to the Zagreb Electronic Fair and they found us, and because they didn't have a possibility to buy this from the States, and they came to us and we succeeded to present them how we can build to connect all police big centers in the China, and they bought this from us. And when I presented this to in Washington for the license for the VEX CPU, nobody in Washington believed that this will work, because this was the largest computer network in this time.
Yep. Okay, well, let's go into that story then. So the Chinese sent a delegation to the Zagreb, was it Zagreb Technology Fair, you said? And it's funny, it's kind of a repeating theme in the book that governments send over delegations, and members of those delegations appear to be very, very technically capable with their questions. So what was the original proposal, as you kind of alluded to, was the ability for the Chinese police to connect different cities together, transmit electronic mail between those cities?
Especially this was for mail, you know. And also we had problem in China because they didn't have good telephone network. And after we succeeded, They bought all new stations from the AT&T from the States. And then AT&T built in China new station, a new telephone equipment. And then also in 1986, Huawei started, because they see in the same way like we started, that through the service engineers, they can start in their own, you know.
Yeah. It's a remarkable story. I have a question, actually. Have you been to China? Have you been to kind of more modern China? Because it's actually pretty fascinating to think that you had a hand in building the first kind of network communication infrastructure in that country, because it, at least from my knowledge, it's probably the most advanced in the world at this point.
Yes, that was. And that is the reason that when I present this project in Washington to in the State Department to all the agencies, you know, which would like to know how we look like, and they were in big surprise. And in this time, we have really a lot of knowledge. And that is the reason that we were danger for the states, because Russian start on ways to get to our technology, and we didn't want to give them, because we know that we had to have a good relationship with the U.S., you know. Mm-hmm. And that is the reason that in the end also Mr. Gorbachev, the president of Soviet Union, came to see us, because they would like to get our Trident machine, which we had in this time very good graphic processor, which we need for military, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason that we didn't want to give them, but our government tried to promise everything, but they didn't have effect to us, because we live all the time on our own. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't have any effect on us, because we were lucky that we had enough money.
Yeah, it's really funny, actually, because both with the Chinese delegation and also later in the book with Gorbachev visiting, there is this funny context to it, because in both cases, as far as you describe it, the Yugoslavian government was convinced that the delegation were interested in, you know, in the first case, I think with the Chinese, they were interested in maybe better international relations between China and Yugoslavia. And in the second case, they were interested in learning how, you know, the self-governed factories of Yugoslavia were running. This was maybe the expectation of the government. However, as you articulate, in both cases, they just sent engineers to tap your brains because you had something that they didn't have.
Yeah, this is the reason that, you know, in this time, all the Indians, Mr. Gandhi came, president of India, came to Yugoslavia, and he met me, and we discussed how they will build software for us, and we will build our Trident, which will, in this time was the only multiprocessor computer, you know, and we succeeded in such way that in 1987 or 1986, even Mercedes for the research bought from us computer, not from Hewlett Packard or from IBM.
That's crazy.
We did a really good machine, and this was our Trident. We called this Triglav, you know.
So, okay, I have to take a small detour in the conversation, because I feel like the fact that you got to speak to President Gandhi about computer infrastructure, I'm really, really curious what the ideas were for Indian communications networks at the time. I mean, what was the nature of that conversation, and what were the aspirations?
You know, Indian would like to build the special software. What they are doing today, they are creating more software for Microsoft and for all other U.S. companies. The software is coming from India, you know. And in this time, also they've seen us like good opportunity to work together, and especially when we present them our Trident and their engineers. So that will be very good relation between India and Yugoslavia. But problem was this, that Yugoslavia didn't believe us. You know, you cannot understand that we didn't have any support from our own government, from our own. We were like, how can I say that we were disturbing this. We were disturbing the system, you know, because they already have some kind of planning system, and we work like a market oriented company, you know, and They didn't like us at all, you know.
So did you try to do outreach to leadership in the government and it was just kind of an incompatible worldview? Or what was the, was there any ability to have communication with them and explain to them your unique global position and how much prosperity you could bring to the government as well?
You know, government start to talk to us when foreigners, especially Indians and Russians and all others, start to talk about us. And that is the reason that they tried to replace me first, you know, because they so that if they replace me, then they can sell everything to the countries where we were not allowed from the U.S. government, you know. And I had a lot of problems in this time.
Yeah, and interpersonally, what was that situation like too? Because we don't often hear stories from people who were, you know, entrepreneurs in the East during the Cold War. I mean, interpersonally, were there problems outside of business even? What was it like to live there? Was there tension also in the engineering community at the time?
Yeah, we had in the engineering community, we have very good support, you know, and we trained a lot of young people, and everybody would like to work for us, especially young engineers and so on, because we had our computers in all these universities and institutions in Yugoslavia. We really get good people all the time. That was the reason that we succeeded.
I have a question. So it seems like the company was very much in this kind of tug of war situation in the Cold War, you know, with your U.S. partners and also especially later on with your kind of joint ventures in the Soviet Union. I wonder if there was ever a kind of thought process of, and maybe this is an oversimplistic way of looking at it, but I wonder if there was ever a consideration of just choosing one side to make things easier, because there were so many tensions between these kind of global powers that were also your kind of partners.
Yeah, I don't know how to say this, but this was a really unusual situation, you know. I have to say also this, that also the U.S. government didn't believe us from the beginning. They start to take us seriously after Chinese project, you know. But okay. Before this, they know that we don't have support from the government, that we are not a political oriented company, and so on. That is the reason that they allow us that we work so long without problems. Later on, SEI also find out that this we are very attractive for the Russian KGB, and that is the reason that in the end everybody did in the way that we just disappeared.
Yeah, so let's try and establish some context there, because there's, for me, the most remarkable kind of dramatic scene in the book. I hope not to spoil it. The book is very, very detailed and worth reading, but the most dramatic scene was really in explaining this moment when Gorbachev and a Russian delegation came to visit you all under the pretenses, it was believed at the time, by the Yugoslavian government. The kind of official story was they were interested in these kind of planned economies and the worker-owned factories. But in truth, they were sending over engineers with a very, very clear interest in the technology that you were all developing at Iskra Delta. The landscape as you painted it was that obviously the KGB was very, very interested in Iskra Delta because of the potential military applications of the technology in the Cold War context. And the CIA was very aware of the fact that the KGB was very excited about what you all were doing, primarily because the context that you established was that, you know, Reagan and Gorbachev at the time had come to some understanding that basically the U.S. was technologically dominant, and that in a kind of Cold War brinkmanship type scenario in which everything was kind of a planned simulation, right? It was a planned simulation of what happens if we attack each other. It's like this chess game, who would win? It was really quite clear at the time that the US was so technologically dominant that the Russians really needed to cool down, right?
You know, the Russians had only the old version of U.S. computers, which they smuggling to the Soviet Union, and that when Mr. Reagan started with the Star Wars, and where really find they have seen that without computers they cannot compete anymore with nothing, because as you will see mm-hmm. today, computers are, and microprocessors are in all equipment and all devices and all research and everything. You need very good computers, and that's the reason that today U.S. has big advantage, because the U.S. still leading not only the technology but standards, which are the most important. That means the standards on microprocessors, standards on software, standards on communication. These are all in the world U.S. standard. And in this time, we were the only one in Europe. We know this, and we also strictly support this, and didn't allow that somebody from the Soviet part will come to us, and that's the reason that in the end Mr. Gorbachev came to talk to our politicians that what they will give us and to Yugoslavia and everything if they will get our computers, because they know that without this they cannot compete anymore with the United States.
And of course, the CIA is going to be a bit kind of very cautious about, or very apprehensive about that meeting, because as you kind of outline in the book, any encouragement from Iskra Delta leadership at the time towards Gorbachev may have given him more confidence in negotiations with the United States. And is it correct to say that at the time of that meeting, the situation looked very much the opposite, that the USSR was taking a more defensive move, was not ambitious as to their technological future. So is this accurate, that at the time the cause of this meeting provoked a lot of kind of concern amongst the U.S. kind of intelligence community?
Yes, you know, I know that they are watching us. Also, our intelligence from Yugoslavia, SCI and the KGB. And that's the reason I didn't want to meet Mr. Gorbachev. And that's the reason that they somehow I escaped from the office and from the company, that they didn't have opportunity to talk to me. After this, I had a lot of problems. But anyway, we survived.
I do have to say, though, in the book, you make a small allusion to how you, or the pressure that was put on you personally as to not take that meeting, which also involves some kind of a plot to inject you with something to give you a fever so that you could not meet Gorbachev. Can we talk about that for a few minutes? Because I feel
like...
You're allowed to talk about it, but it's a very, very small part of the book, but it feels like a very personally kind of traumatic experience.
Yeah, you know, some people came and arranged everything that I have opportunity to leave the office. And I got after this fever, and they didn't push anymore that I have to meet with Mr. Gorbachev.
It's like something from a movie, though. I hope you understand. From our perspective, being injected by a secret agent so that you miss a meeting with the leader of Russia is a very dramatic situation.
It is, but you know. Even more dramatic things happened after this, you know, because we were really under pressure, and Russia were trying everything to get possible to get our machines, you know. Mm-hmm.
Has there ever been any, actually, this is me changing the topic a little bit, but has there ever been any interest in producing maybe a film about this particular tension? Because it feels like a very contemporary lens through which to understand this history. I've never seen anything outside of your book. I've never seen it described as a battle for technological dominance in terms that we understand today, right? Thinking about microcomputers, etc.
Yeah, this was battles, you know. But in the beginning, we had the orientation that we have to work with U.S. companies as we started. You know, our goal was to compete with similar companies in the States, and we know that in Europe we don't have any similar company in this. This I talk about 80s, you know. In Europe, you didn't have any computer company except us, and which we built U.S. compatible computers, and that is the reason that also we start to sell our machines to the West. To the we open office in Santa Clara, then New York, and try to sell our modules and so on. We also have part of our production in Austria, because in Yugoslavia we didn't had to get enough technology because of hard currency. And that is the reason that we start to sell more and more to the West. And then we start in direct competition with Hewlett-Packard, with all other companies.
It's really interesting also, you know, just to build on Matt's idea of a film, because I feel like, you know, the California ideology has become so dominant in the last several decades. And the story that we're often told in the U.S. specifically is that, you know, only Silicon Valley could have developed this technical revolution because it was coming out of the hippie movement with a focus on individualism. So it's really interesting to see a competitive kind of community, but coming out of a socialist landscape, building kind of competitive products. So I could see why the United States would be, invested in, I don't know if you would call it sabotage, what ultimately happened to Iskra Delta. Is that how you would define the kind of closure of Iskra Delta as sabotage?
And they try a lot of things, you know. The most important was this one. When we finished our network in China, they did. They tried to do everything that this will not work, you know. And this was really tough time. What I would like to tell you that U.S. companies had almost 50% higher prices in Europe. This means U.S. companies like IBM, Hewlett-Packard, and so on, which were selling to the West, to the Germany, and so on. And this means that we have a very good price performance opportunity to profitable sale to the West, because U.S. Companies have big uplift according to the domestic prices which were in this time in the States, and we were using this we sell our computers this time to the West very profitable, because we bought peripheral devices like disks and so on and components, chips, in Japan, like U.S. companies did in this time, you know, and that is the reason that we were a very profitable company, and we didn't have need any banking support from this socialist banks, which were under government control, you know, and because they didn't control us through the banks. We were also free. They didn't have opportunity to have influence to us, because we had our own money. And I think you are free if you have your own money. You are not free if you own somebody else that or you are so dependent from the bank. Then you are not free.
We should have a conversation about Bitcoin.
but let's dig into that a little bit further, because that was part of the kind of, you know, one of the big issues that Iskra Delta dealt with was this kind of liquidity crisis towards the end there. I believe I read that the company ramped up their sales to the Soviet Union by like 250% in 1 year. And then there was an issue with getting the Soviet Union to pay for units that had already been shipped and delivered. And so then there was a kind of liquidity crisis because you weren't being paid for what you had delivered. So I'm wondering why they didn't pay. What was the reasoning there? And it seems to me like that was a little bit maybe short-sighted if they were trying to collaborate with Iskra Delta and get access to this technology to kind of stunt the company with a liquidity crisis seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, and I think in order to establish that, we should also establish what happened with the formation of the Russian-based Iskra Delta.
No, we didn't want to do this. You know, they had big pressure to us through the government, especially through the federal government. But they didn't have influence to us because they tried to put their own people inside, but we were very clever that we know who is ours, who is not. And that is reason that they were in the end when Yugoslavia split and between Serbia and Slovenia start big fight. They didn't allow their customers from other republic to pay us what we already delivered, and this time we came into liquidity problem. When we have first time the liquidity problem, they see opportunity to bankrupt us. But can you imagine? We had so much capital that take 25 years. This year, I mean, March, Republika Kot recognized the end of the story because still money left. The stunning money left to the government budget. You know, this was such time that is no company in the world which would be so profitable with so many assets that somebody would put in the bankrupt. But this was political reason because they didn't have opportunity to how can I say. Catch us to have us in their hands, you know, and then also Delta split into almost 100 companies. All my colleagues established their own companies later on, and they are still living, you know.
It's a really tragic story, though. You wonder. I mean, that's remarkable that it took that there was 25 years worth of capital there that it took. It's a really tragic story at the same time, though, obviously. I mean, beyond the political and historical kind of significance of it, that one wonders what the last 25 years might have been like if there was a European technology powerhouse.
Yeah, but you know, we were not living in the right time, you know. This was a very difficult time for Europe. And also, especially for Yugoslavia, that we split it in so many republics, and they didn't realize what technology we had, you know, and who did this was Chinese. Chinese learned a lot from us, and after when we succeeded, they start to build their own companies on the same way like we did with. That's the reason that they were copying everything from the United States. And also Huawei. Huawei was born in 1986 when we finished our project, when they have seen how we did without U.S. support, such big network, you know. And then they built also Huawei and all other the electronics company and so on. And when IBM gave the PC to Lenovo that start to assemble it in the China, this was even more funny because today Chinese is producing more computers than the United States.
Yeah, and of course Huawei is now also a big political situation between the United States and China. I mean, that's been
that'll be the podcast in 20 years.
Yeah, that's been a major it's a major kind of political flashpoint of the past few years has been, you know, the migration of a lot of technological capacity over to China and Huawei's ability to manufacture and sell devices for cheaper, and obviously concerns over vulnerabilities in the software, potential vulnerabilities in the software.
They have also a lot of their own people in U.S. universities, you know.
Yeah.
that's also a reason that they can grow so fast, you know.
So speaking of universities, you were recruited to come to MIT when things were starting to unravel a little bit at Iskra Delta. And you write in the book that this is most likely a kind of strategic move by the U.S. to kind of speed up the dissolution of Iskra Delta. Did you realize this at the time, or was this something that you came to realize afterwards? And how was that move for you?
You know, for me, I already decided that in such that I can not work anymore in the such. How can I say, non-democratic area and
difficult and stressful conditions
to say the least.
That's the reason that I started with my own company again, but I start to work with AT&T, and in this time. In the 90s, I started to help to build optical network in Slovenia because for me was the most important was to have our own optical infrastructure, because in the future everything is going to the optical. Also, processors will be based on the photons and so on. And in the future, everything is going into photons and optical communication.
There was one phrase, this is kind of jumping, this is kind of random, but there was one phrase that came up in the book a couple times that was called IC rather than IT, and it was called information consciousness. Can you tell us what that phrase means and how that applies to the kind of approach from Iskra Delta?
You know, we from the beginning in our development, we know that the human being is the most important part in the most sophisticated computer. So let's say it's such way. Brains work as computer, heart as a source of energy, and mouse and nose and everything work like input-output devices, you know. And today, the biggest study is into brains, because brains works in the way like also big servers works with a thousand of microprocessors parallel. But in parallel computing, we were some kind of the innovators in the world. And also our professors has lectures in the States and in Japan. That means the parallel processing will be more and more important, especially when we are moving into nano area. That means 10 on minus 9, you know. Mm-hmm. But we had such strategical development in the right direction, but in the country like in the less without how can I say without proper political organization, you cannot work in the way we would like.
And so this term information consciousness, it seems that also at the time there was a lot of very kind of innovative early artificial intelligence work that was also happening in the former Yugoslavia, and that the systems you were developing were helping to enable. Is that a field that you're particularly interested in?
Yeah, consciousness is very important. Yeah.
I have a kind of speculative question, if you might humor me. If you could go back and tell yourself something at the beginning of the formation of Delta, or at the beginning of the collaboration between Iskra and Delta, if there was something you could kind of, a bit of advice you could give yourself, or a kind of warning, or something that you could have changed, what would that be?
You know, first of all, we were very lucky that we in the end finished without problems, we were in jail somewhere, you know. But that is the reason that in my book, I made dedication to this book to the young enthusiasts, innovators, and all those who dare, you know. This time, we were very young, and this is the reason that we work in the way which were against the this time political
norms.
Yeah. But as I told you, you can work in the way like we did if you are young. If you were all around 25 years, 25 and 30 years, we didn't take care so much about politics and so on. And we like computers and software and so on. And we were lucky that it doesn't matter that in the end we have 2,000 people. We were all very, very cooperative and work on the friendly level like today some U.S. companies still doing. You know.
And so I wonder, is there anything that is developing right now? I assume that you're still very much interested in following developments, like technological developments. Is there anything that's happening at the moment that you're particularly excited about?
Yes, I am exciting. What I'm getting information from MIT on a monthly basis, and what can I see today? Everything is moving. Studying the brains and how to interact brains with the robots, and especially the way which is going artificial intelligence. And networks, you know, nobody believed that these networks will go in the way that wireless communication will be so good with such speeds. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine that in the 90s, only United States had a strategic that they wired complete Earth with the optical cables? And today, the Chinese this doesn't have that fast internet, gigabit internet works only on the optical infrastructure. And that is the reason that I started when I came back to Yugoslavia, to Slovenia, to start to build with AT&T the most important deal, optical infrastructure for Slovenia. And Slovenia, I can claim that we have better off optical infrastructure than United States, because the people from AT&T helped me that we really started first with the premises, with their Systemax system, and later on we interconnect all cities and everything with cables, and today Slovenia has very fast internet.
That's amazing.
I'm sure much faster than Germany.
Oh, German internet is terrible.
Yeah, we're in Germany at the moment, and
we can thank Helmut Kohl and some.
You know, Germany is completely dependable on the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, it was noticeable in the towards the end of your book. You discuss a lot about this kind of American technological dominance, which was described very precisely and accurately. And I couldn't detect there was some maybe some skepticism on your part of, you know, of what that might represent moving forward. I wonder what your thoughts are on that particular kind of U.S. dominance, because obviously on the one hand, you describe how you've been very happy to engage with the U.S. The U.S. were original partners in the formation of your company. You've been at MIT. And on the other hand, of course, there's a great tragedy in a sense that, you know, one of the company that you formed could have potentially provided some resistance to such a maybe monocultural perspective on technological development. I wonder, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about this kind of U.S. dominance?
You know, first of all, I know from the beginning, when I learned first at digital and later on at MIT, the most important is establish standards. And the U.S. Had a policy from the beginning to settle the standard for the hardware, software, and communications. And all this international standard in communication and information technology comes from the United States. And nobody can start today their own standard, let's say Germany or China or, I don't know, India. It's impossible because, especially in the system software, and the communication software is very important who leads the standards. And that is the reason that they don't have chance that they compete in this area with the states. You know.
That's fascinating. That actually leads to my next question. I was going to ask, were there any kind of standards design or architectural decisions that differed between Iskra Delta and the kind of dominant U.S. systems of the time that would kind of fundamentally change the way that we interact with technology had Iskra Delta's designs been implemented instead?
Yeah, you know, we were very lucky that we met people from digital equipment, which they established digital in the 70s and 60s. In 1960, 1970, 1980, Digital Equipment Corporation was the most important company in this field, especially on the mini computers and the communications. You know, also U.S. DARPA and ARPANET and everything which military use was based on the deck machines from the beginning, you know. And that is the reason that when we saw this in our trainings in the States, we were in the right direction what we have to do, that we have to be very careful with the communication software, communication devices, and so on. And that is the reason that we built our own communication controllers, communication software, and so on. But everything compatible with the U.S. companies, you know. Mm-hmm. That was our main goal, that we were all the time compatible with the companies from in the States where we get the basic knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So you started out from that kind of fundamental basic starting point.
So I have another question, which is not something that's necessarily covered in the book, but I think it's a subtext that's quite interesting. So amongst now, obviously we're involved. We grew up in a kind of technological environment that you people such as yourself really helped to contextualize. The tension that you are describing in this book between your aspirations and ambitions with Iskra Delta and this kind of planned economy is something that comes up a lot for people around about our age. There is a lot of romanticism towards, particularly actually, Yugoslavian planned economies, this idea of self-governed companies, factories, so on, and the idea of technocratically managing an economy. I bring up the example, I'm not sure how familiar you are, but you most likely will be, of someone like a Stafford Beer, like the cybernetics personalities, and projects, for example, like, are you familiar with Project CyberSyn, this Chilean project from the 70s, where the Chilean... There was a Chilean president who invited a cybernetician to help build communications infrastructure in Chile with the intention of kind of technocratically enabling a planned economy. I wonder, you know, given your experience, it's really rare we get the opportunity to talk to somebody who was struggling to build a technology company in an environment where this kind of planned economy was antagonistic or wanted to impede positive technological development. Do you have any wisdom maybe to impart for people now who maybe see the goals of a planned economy as something to aspire to?
You know, first I have to say the self-management. In theory, is very good that managed by the people, especially when you have software people. You have to be very careful with the people, and you have to motivate people that don't go to somewhere else because they have everything in their brains. You know, that means that self management was a good idea, very good, but not the planned economy. Today in Slovenia, we have the right organization, and that is reasoning that in Slovenia, we have a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of very good companies, small companies, which are also working with the U.S. companies and with Silicon Valley and so on. And they have also some very important part in this relations. With development, so on. This means that if you take care about people in the future, when we are going into digital area, you know, is the most important. As always, is software. But here is the are people the most important, which are designing this networks and this robots and so on. And if you don't motivate these people, then you cannot go further. And I think that all the top companies in the States and some also somewhere else, where the owners motivate these people, they grow very fast, you know. And and we had such organization in Delta, you know. And I take care. It doesn't matter that we were in such unfriendly situation with the politics, but I take care about people the most, you know, that they like to go to the company to work. They like to work all the days, the night, and so on. And that is the reason that we succeed. Mm-hmm. The theory is self-management very good, but in the end, people have to have common seal like owners and so on, you know.
So was the company then privately owned, or did your colleagues also have stock options, or how what was the financial structure of the company?
My colleagues from Delta, they established in whole Yugoslavia more than 100 companies, not such big, but 100 people.
Yep.
And in this area in information technology, they are doing a lot of things, you know. And they have also some are very good, some not. But all of this which have good relations with the employees, with the partners, they work very well.
Wonderful. So the occasion that we were brought to learn of your book, actually, was for the Ljubljana Biennale, which is happening right now. I wonder, have you had the occasion to visit it? Because the curatorial title for it is Iskra Delta.
Yes, you know, I was very surprised when I have seen, after 30 years, Iskra Delta again. And you know, I was so surprised that they chose our company ideas for this Biennale. I visited this, and I'm really happy that this started this. And also, what is also interesting, that another people, let's say, Sensor Studio, build the film about Iskra Delta. This means stars in the time is some kind of the days of this film. And I think that you have to see this film, which is going to be presented in Biennale 22nd of October. Mm-hmm. Maybe because also they have English wording.
Very cool.
And you will see that film somehow is compatible with this what is going in Biennale.
Wonderful. We would love to. And I think, yeah, I was looking on YouTube. There has been some clips, kind of like home movie clips of meetings, employee meetings from Iskra Delta at the time. There's one particularly beautiful one where there's a group of men singing like a folk song from 1987 or something like this. I wonder, it would be really, really wonderful to put some moving images to this book.
Okay. I hope that especially now everything is moving into digitalization, mm-hmm. that young people will really find out from my book how you have to fight, how you have to have your belief to your ideas, that you can succeed only in such way, mm-hmm. And that you establish good people around you, and that's my intention to write this book. Book first appeared 2008, and then 2013. Was published in the States, mm-hmm. I really hope that young people will find especially the idea what we did in such unfriendly
circumstances.
Today, which our situation is much better, that they even can come with their own ideas mm-hmm. further. Especially when I'm talking to the young people, I always say the most important are ideas. If you have a good idea, then you are the right one. Then you
That's
have
what
to
Matt
find.
Always says too.
It's true.
Around you, you have to find similar people and succeed it on the market.
Well, it's truly a remarkable story of fearlessness and resolve in a very complicated situation. It's anyone who's interested in kind of like the history of technology, but also just the Cold War in general.
Yeah,
it's a fascinating kind of glimpse into one company's struggle to compete on the world stage at that time. There is one question that we ask all of our guests, and we would love it if you would be willing to answer it. And that is, what does interdependence mean to you?
What mean to me? This is the most important things that for the young people to become entrepreneur, you know, and innovator. This is for me the most important for young people.
We agree.
Wonderful. Well, Yannis, it's been so lovely to read your book and to get to know you a little bit. I really, really appreciate your time. Do you have anything? So we're going to point to the book, we're going to point to the Biennale and make the announcement for the film. Do you have anything else that you would like to leave with our listeners?
No. I'm going to tell producers, and especially the people from Biennale, that they will send you maybe this copy of the film, or if you will come to Ljubljana, that maybe we can go together to some beer somewhere, that you will watch this film, if this will not send to the States, because they are trying to sell this also to some U.S. distributor as well, you know.
That would be really, really wonderful. I think that it's unlikely that we will be there in late October, but it is very likely that we will be in Ljubljana at some point soon, at some point in the next year or so, maybe.
Super.
So sharing a beer sounds absolutely wonderful.
No, it's super. Yeah.
And I have to ask you some more questions about this injection because I still have okay. this story in my head.
Yeah, it was very difficult time this time. Can you imagine to have these people in your office and then from the such big country like was in this time Soviet Union?
I cannot imagine it. I cannot imagine.
I can't imagine probably any of the meetings that you took with any of these world leaders. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Well, Yanis, thank you. Thank you so much. I hope we get to keep in touch. And best of luck. Best of luck with everything. It's been lovely to meet you.
Thank you also to you and that you invite me, and I'm really glad that after so many years, first I saw again Iskra Delta in Ljubljana, and especially that these people from Biennale did so much that we grow again from the scratch, you know.
I believe it. I mean, it really is a fascinating story. And the last thing I have to say as well is I'm a big football fan. And I absolutely need the Iskra Delta Partizan Belgrade football shirt. That's one thing. This is one thing I have to track down somehow.